His name is Lyle Pressler, punk rock legend and music industry vet. His name is Jim Shear, most tenured DJ in the history of music television. It's the Week in Music with Lyle and Jim, and it all starts now.
Hello there, everybody. My name is Jim Shear.
And I'm Lyle Pressler.
And on today's episode, we will chew the fat on Guns N' Roses, Metallica, Suicide Squad, Star Trek, Garth Brooks, Tom DeLonge, Radiohead. But before we do all of that, the Democratic National Convention wraps up tonight in Philadelphia. Last week, we mentioned the RNC. We should do equal time here, so we got to mention the DNC. Now, Lyle, I know you said that you weren't going to watch. Did you break your promise?
No, I didn't watch. I mean, I know what was happening, and what I chose to do was just wait till the next morning and kind of watch some little highlights here and there, or mainly just read about what people said.
Okay. I watched a lot of it,
mm-hmm.
and the presentation for the Democrats trumps the GOP's convention.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny because Trump promised quote-unquote showbiz, and there was not much showbiz. I mean, the reason I don't watch these things, frankly, Jim, is just because I just find that the thing becomes an echo chamber, you know, where everyone's just basically saying the same thing. However, I will say that I did see, you know, a little clip of Michelle's speech, and I saw a clip of the president's speech. Well, the president's speech was a magnificent speech. And the contrast, I think they established, the two parties established clear contrast between them.
Oh, yeah.
Which isn't always the case.
Bill Clinton, by the way, is a genius.
Yes, he is.
Because he got up there, and you could see his agenda, and even though you saw it coming, you bought everything he was selling.
Yeah, well, that's what he's been doing all his life. No, he's really amazing. I mean, I would tell you, like, the man also, and I know this from personal experience, the man has a photographic memory. He will, if he meets you, I mean, in the proper circumstances, he will remember you 15 years later, your name, and he'll even ask you personal questions.
He, Slick Willie, right?
Oh, yeah.
Still got it. And I liked that within his speech, he said, yeah, this is the fun part, man. I like giving the speech. He's like, but the hard part is actually putting it into action. He was mentioning within his speech what he was doing, but we still bought it. And then I loved Obama's speech, but part of me was thinking, I think Obama's a better speaker than a president.
Yeah, I know. I think the reality, though, is that from the very beginning, the Congress basically said, we're not going to do anything with this guy.
Yeah.
And that was 8 years of not doing anything. So if you don't have a Congress that'll do anything, then you're just going to sit there and make speeches.
Didn't get a lot of help. Yeah. And my one question is, why didn't DNCE perform at the DNC? It would have been a match made in heaven.
Could have been.
So it hasn't been a huge week in music, news-wise. So I just want to get casual for a second and pick your brain on random things this week, if I can, if I may.
Certainly.
First random tidbit, I was on the subway this week, and there was a whole Sprite advertising campaign with their Legend series. Mm. So as you know, Lyle, soda companies like to think out of the box during the summer season.
That's right.
And they do crazy things with their cans. So on limited edition Sprite cans, you've got three hip-hop legends with corresponding lyrics from their catalog. So I'm looking at the Subway advertisements. And by the way, it's three figures of hip-hop, and they're kind of painted not that greatly. So I'm like, yeah, that's Tupac, obviously, because he's bald and he's got a nose ring.
Right.
And then I saw a girl, and I couldn't make her out, but I saw her can, and it said Supa Dupa Fly. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's Missy Elliott. And then there's a third guy next to Tupac and Missy Elliott, and I couldn't figure out who it was. And then it says Legends of Hip Hop, and I thought, well, I'm a huge hip hop fan.
So who was
I've been working in music for over 20 years. I got home and I Googled Sprite Legend series. J. Cole.
J. Cole.
J. Cole.
J. Cole.
Tupac, Missy Elliott, J. Cole.
Wow.
Now, is that wrong? Is he a legend?
I mean, I don't have any problem with, if people want to make him a legend, that's fine. I don't have any issue with that, but it wouldn't, let's put it this way, if I was making a list, and I would really not be terribly qualified to do that, although, just from hearing you talk, or hearing other people talk, I think I could make a decent list, but I don't think he'd be on it at this point.
Now, if J. Cole were walking down the street, would you be able to recognize him?
No.
Okay.
No. There's too many people out there, too many rappers, and some of them I recognize, obviously. Lil Wayne I can recognize.
Yeah.
But
if Nas was walking down the street, you'd say, yeah, there's Nas.
Right. Or Common, you know. But usually they have, like, a pretty distinctive look. You know,
mm-hmm.
and J. Cole doesn't really have that distinctive a look, so I don't think you should. I don't think you should beat yourself up over this.
Okay, joke. And the painting wasn't that great.
Well, that's another problem, isn't it?
Yeah, no diss to the artist. So I want to point out, Lyle, that Guns N' Roses is on the road. They're doing their stadium tour, and I've heard nothing but good things from their show. So you know, if Axl was misbehaving, we'd be talking about it nonstop. So I just want to take a moment to say, good on you, Guns N' Roses.
A smattering of applause.
this is the feel-good story of the summer.
I think so. I think it's great. I have no problem with it. I think it's fantastic. And you're right. If there was something crazy happening, we'd be talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we should just shut up.
Why didn't we go to the show?
I don't know, because I just don't really like going to stadium shows with a bunch of people wearing bandanas and screaming about Guns N' Roses, who are all like 45 or 50 years old.
Yeah, see, tickets are very expensive.
Oh, are they?
Yeah, and I don't want to milk my contacts for, you know, a Guns N' Roses stadium show, so I sat this one out. Although I was very curious. I would have loved to have seen that at MetLife Stadium. And I was in Pittsburgh earlier this summer, and 2 days after I left Pittsburgh, they played Heinz Field. So, yeah, but I've heard good things about this stadium show. So former Guns N' Roses tourmates Metallica, they were sending out social media posts yesterday randomly celebrating the 32nd birthday of Ride the Lightning. Now, I think that might actually be my favorite Metallica album,
mm-hmm.
and they asked fans to share pictures of them with the album and promised to retweet some of those pictures. So I took a picture of my cat holding an autographed copy of Ride the Lightning. Sadly, it wasn't retweeted, although it was liked by Metallica.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, Ride the Lightning's an incredible record. And my only anecdote about that is that when I went to Georgetown University, I didn't live on campus, and I used to have to drive my car down and kind of park it on the street. And usually I went early so I could get a space. And I would sit there in my car for maybe a couple of hours. And, you know, a couple times I was sitting in my car just blasting Ride the Lightning. And, you know, and all these people with these Georgetown guys were walking by looking at me like I was some sort of a maniac or scumbag. Meanwhile, I did really, really well in college. So there you go.
My Ride the Lightning memory is that on the weekend that I was going to ask my girlfriend to marry me, I had a couple CDs in my car, and for whatever reason, I was listening to Ride the Lightning that entire weekend before I asked her to marry me. I don't know why I didn't have my Beastie Boys CDs with me, but for whatever reason, Ride the Lightning was in the car, and that was my music of choice on the day that I asked my girlfriend to marry me.
If that was a movie, that would be called foreshadowing.
Lyle! So the film Suicide Squad opened up this week. It's not a superhero movie. It's a super villain movie, which stars, among others, Will Smith and Jared Leto. And this got me thinking about their careers.
Mm.
Will Smith started in music, then branched off into film. And Jared Leto started in film and then branched off into music. Their worlds collide in Suicide Squad. My question for you is, would you rather these guys play music, or do you like them in movies?
At this point, I would say they should just do the movies.
Yeah.
I think the problem is going back and forth, really. I mean, Will Smith got into acting early on. I mean, he did, and he's obviously become one of the most powerful box office draws in the world. And if he wants to go out and play music, that's great. But I don't know that going back and forth really works too well for people. I think once you, but then again, I mean, who am I to say? Like, you know, it seems like he settled on more or less a career. And now he's into producing. They're doing a lot of stuff. So as far as Jared's concerned, I mean, I never really cared for his band. I mean, they were fine. And I
didn't like them. Well, I can say that I didn't like them.
Yeah.
And I still don't.
But I mean, they were, you know, I say fairly successful. But he's been a lot more successful and a lot more recognizable in movies at this point. So I don't know. I don't know if, you know, especially after Suicide Squad, does he go back and, like, you know, do another tour or something? I don't know. I mean,
because it's tough to go out on the road and promote an album.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's at least as demanding as preparing and executing a role.
I've interviewed Jared Leto several times. Mm-hmm. Because 30 Seconds to Mars, they became the darlings of MTV2 however many years ago. So I've met him many times. I consider him a frenemy.
Okay.
Because I can't stand him, but I don't hate him. And he's almost endearing because he's such an a-hole.
Right.
So the thing is, I think he's such a talented actor. So I would hope that he would stay in that lane, because I'm not a big fan of his band 30 Seconds to Mars. However, with Will Smith, I would love to hear what he has left in the tank.
Yeah, that's true. I guess that's true.
Because over the last 10 or 15 years, there have been times where he's gotten on the microphone and he still has it.
Right.
So I just want to hear him rip one more time on an album.
You know, he might do that.
But because he's so successful, you know, why would you do that?
Well, it's not... That's actually its own answer. Because he's so successful, he can do that and not worry about it.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, it's not as if Will Smith comes out tomorrow morning with a track and it's not that great, it's not like that's going to compromise his movie career.
Yeah.
I mean, and by the way, I mean, again, like I say, he's moved on into production and, I mean, you know, it's not going to hurt him. And so he has the leisure, if you will, or the good fortune or the, you know, the luxury of doing it if he wants to.
So, speaking of summer movies, everyone keeps texting me about the new Star Trek movie because apparently the Beastie Boy Sabotage plays a crucial role at the end of the film.
Hmm.
Now, we've discussed this various times. In MCA's will, he didn't want any of his music to be used commercially, although there seems to be a loophole in the film world.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of Will Smith, too, Sabotage was used in the trailer for Hitch. Sabotage was used in the trailer for Star Trek. No Sleep Till Brooklyn used in the trailer for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I saw The Secret Life of Pets this week.
I saw it, too.
No Sleep Till Brooklyn shows up in that film.
It does. I think they're going across the bridge, right? I guess the only thing we can conclude is there is a loophole. I mean, none of us have seen The Will. So I don't know what that contains. I mean, I think that's just a real fine line, though. If you want to do a hierarchy here, you can say at the top of the list in terms of exploitation would be products, right? So, you know, no products.
Which they've sued for, and I think they've won two lawsuits already.
Right, exactly. So products are at the top of the list, and then you come down and you say, okay, now, if we're going to talk about film use or TV use, the question then becomes, is there a difference between simply placing the song in a movie or in a TV show as opposed to allowing it to be used as an advertisement for that movie?
Mm-hmm.
I think we're getting, you know, kind of esoteric here on this.
Yeah, you kind of rationalize things.
Yeah.
Where it's in the movie, so because it's in the movie, sure, you can use it for the trailer.
Right. But I would consider
those two things. But only because it plays a crucial role in the movie.
But I would consider those things to be two very different things.
Yeah. Well,
I mean,
I
would.
Too.
But.
You know, speaking of Sabotage, we're going to be practicing that very soon.
Yeah. The famous one chord Sabotage.
See, so for those that don't know, Lyle is participating in my Beastie Boys cover group for MCA Day happening in Brooklyn on August 20th. And I got Jeremy Shatton, who's famous for taking the cover photo for Paul's Boutique, but he was also the founding member of the Young Aborigines, the group that predated the Beastie Boys. And man, Sabotage is tough to play on the bass.
Yeah, it's tough to play on the bass. It's not tough to play on the guitar.
And there was a time where I thought, well, maybe we shouldn't play Sabotage, but because it saved the world in Star Trek, I thought, well, I think we have to play Sabotage.
We almost have to now.
So yeah, we'll see how Sabotage turns out on MCA Day, August 20th at Littlefield Art Space in Brooklyn. Now, this next story is kind of unbelievable. To celebrate his new channel on Sirius XM, Garth Brooks, and it's not surprising that Garth Brooks has a Sirius XM channel, but he'll be playing his first ever show at Nashville's historic Ryman Auditorium. The concert happens on September 8th.
Wow.
Really? He's never played the Ryman?
That's amazing. I mean, Lenny Kravitz played the Ryman. Jim, you should explain what the Ryman is exactly.
It's this old school theater in Nashville. Is it part of the Grand Ole Opry?
It was the Grand Ole Opry.
Is it 100 years old? I mean, it's an old school venue in Nashville, and anyone who is famous in country music played the Ryman. That's like saying that the Ramones never played CBGBs.
Right. I mean, I've stood on that stage. I was fortunate enough to get a behind-the-scenes like little tour with a guy down there. When you stand on that stage, you know, I hate to be this guy, but when you stand on that stage and you realize the people who stood on that stage, it's mm-hmm. it's pretty, and you look out at those seats, and it is very old. It's pretty old.
Yeah,
it's
the seats,
awesome.
I mean, you look at the seats, and you're like, damn, man, this place is old.
Oh, it is. It is. And so I'm really surprised by that. That does surprise me.
So I've got some numbers. The Ryman Auditorium, originally called the Union Gospel Tabernacle, opened up in 1892, closed up shop in 1904, and then it opened up as the Grand Ole Opry House in 1963 through 1974. Mm-hmm. And then there was reconstruction, and then it said 1994 to present.
Right.
So it's, I guess technically it's been around since 1892.
Wow.
Capacity 2,362.
Boy, I wouldn't even imagine it was that big.
So, Tom DeLonge, I want to talk about him for a second. Blink 182 is currently touring the country without Tom DeLonge. What's Tom doing? He is sending out pictures on Instagram of him setting up secret meetings with influential leaders discussing UFO threats. One post read, "Believe it or not, this is what a secret meeting looks like. They were waiting for my arrival. I seem to have been doing quite a lot of these lately. And yes, it is who you think it is." So people on the internet, because of his white head, speculated that he was meeting with Bill Clinton about UFOs. Now, before you say he's crazy, Lyle, did you hear the news story this morning?
Which one?
There was a fireball seen over China.
That was,
and people didn't know they didn't know if it was a meteorite or UFO.
That was one of their ICBM tests.
Oh, damn.
That's frequently what these things are, by the way. You know, I mean, I'm not going to get too crazy on this, but you realize that there's a lot of secret weapons testing that goes on all over the world.
So Tom should be more worried about rockets than UFOs?
I would be a little bit more worried about, say, nuclear weapons and stealth bombers and stuff like that than I would about UFOs. And by the way, if it's a UFO, does that mean they crashed? I mean, you know, it's like these incredible alien technologies, they routinely crash. I don't know they crash more often than we do.
Well, yeah, maybe our atmosphere is just lethal.
Yeah, well, you know, then they probably shouldn't come here.
Yeah.
Haven't they gotten a message in the last 50, 60 years?
On the opening night of Radiohead's North American tour, they busted out OK Computer's Letdown, the first time they played it live in 10 years. You may remember this year they also performed Creep, but as we mentioned on a previous show, they don't play a whole bunch of stuff from their first three albums anymore.
Well, they're Radiohead. They can do what they want.
Does this give people false expectations?
Well, I would hope by now that people know that they're not going to get what they want.
Yeah.
I mean, but I will say, you know, one of the questions to get gets asked all the time to people who have been playing music on stage for years and years and years, whether it's The Who or The Rolling Stones or the Red Hot Chili Peppers. It doesn't matter who it is. You know, the question is always like, God, what do you guys think when you have to go out and play X for the 900 millionth time? And and if you're smart as an artist, you say, hey, you know what? People want to hear it, and we're going to play it. And that's what people pay to come see. And, you know, but that doesn't mean you have to do it. It's just, you know, it's a question for you as an individual artist. Do you want to give people what they want, or do you want to do a show that's more geared towards challenging them to hear new things, or do you want to focus on things that they might not have paid enough attention to? I mean, it's all over the place.
So I find this very interesting. It's a great idea. On August 1st, VH1 Classic will switch over to MTV Classic, and it will be 90s themed. Mm. We get Unplugged, we get Daria, and we get Beavis and Butthead.
Ooh.
This makes perfectly good sense to me.
Well, yeah.
Do you like it?
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense because of the fact that you have to understand that MTV's archives are just massive. I mean, between the videos and the shows they did and the series they did, they have so much stuff. And that stuff has just been sitting there gathering dust for the longest time. And, you know, some of it shows up in places like YouTube or whatever. But but for the most part, a lot of it is sort of lost to the public. So they're very smart to go in and look through all of that stuff and try to produce programming that will appeal to people who remember that from their younger days. Because
Gen X is in their 40s now, 40s and 50s. So
absolutely. And it's all
about the prime demo.
It's all about nostalgia. So absolutely. I think it's a good move on their part.
Yeah, August 1st, also the 35th anniversary of MTV.
Right.
So that ends our brain picking session. And when we come back, we will talk Lollapalooza. Presler, The Week in Music. Lyle, this weekend, Lollapalooza is celebrating its 25th anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
Lollapalooza happening in Chicago. It actually starts today. We've done this before. I'm going to give you multiple acts that are playing at the same time, and you tell me who you want to see.
Okay.
So, day one, Thursday, later tonight, we have the option of seeing Lana Del Rey, The Last Shadow Puppets, Flostradamus, or the hip-hop legend J. Cole.
Well, it's funny. Initially, I wrote down, I said Lana Del Rey, only because I'm always curious as to what she's up to, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But given what we've talked about J. Cole, I'd probably go see him so that at least I could recognize him if I see him on the street.
I'm going to grab me a Sprite and watch J. Cole. I think I would... I'm not crazy about any of those. I might start off with The Last Shadow Puppets, and then I might walk past the dance tent, which I don't even think it's a tent anymore. It's like a dance section with Flostradamus, and then I don't know. I'd flip a coin.
Well, so you see, you're sort of rigging the game here, where you have this idea that you can sort of walk from one place to another, like, you know. I mean, if that's the case, then I'll just say, yeah, I'll do them all. Okay, let's just do them all.
Well, the thing, if you stand on the outside, you can kind of walk to all the,
well, that's
you know,
true.
All
yeah.
the stages. Yeah. All right, so day two, which is Friday, you've got Mac Miller playing at the same time as M83. Who are you seeing, Lyle?
M83.
M83.
Yeah.
I've seen M83 at Lollapalooza before,
yep.
So I think I might see Mac Miller this time.
Okay.
So later that night, we've got Major Lazer, Ghost, Martin Garrix, or Radiohead performing at the same time.
You know, I guess I just want to be disappointed, so I go see Radiohead.
As much as I love Major Lazer,
yes.
As much as I would have fun catching Martin Garrix set, I have to see Radiohead.
Yeah, curiosity.
In the hopes that they might play a song from the Bends. I just got to be there.
Right.
So day number three, Two Door Cinema Club or Jane's Addiction?
Well, Jane's Addiction.
Yeah, yeah. Same here.
Yeah.
Jane's Addiction. Yeah. Closing out the night, Disclosure or Red Hot Chili Peppers, both playing at the same time.
Well, I'd probably try to catch a little of both, but given your new parameters here. But but I think I'd see the Chili Peppers only because I'm always sort of curious as to, you know, they got, you know, there's a new guitar player. I mean, you know, it's that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and yeah. I want to see, like, is, you know, is our man doing well? Is he all right? You know, is Anthony mm-hmm. doing
yep.
well? So
yep.
I guess I'd probably try to catch some of that. Although I must say, when I have seen them, I've been disappointed with their live show. They don't usually sound that good.
Yeah, it's not as thick.
It's not as thick, and Anthony has some definite pitch problems, or has mm-hmm. in the past that I've seen him. And I think also sometimes it looks small to me. Because
yeah,
they try to play in that tight little group thing. And mm-hmm. and while that's a wonderful, cool thing from a band perspective, on a big stage, it doesn't really look that good.
So the final day of Lollapalooza, Third Eye Blind or Years and Years?
Again, curiosity, I got to see Third Eye Blind.
See, Years and Years was my favorite new group of last year, and I was out of town when they performed in New York City.
Okay.
So this is where we separate.
All right.
And I'm going to catch Years and Years at Lollapalooza.
All right.
And then closing out the festival, Ellie Goulding, Die Antwoord or LCD Sound System?
I think it's got to be LCD Sound System.
Mm-hmm.
Again, more for the fact that people, you know, they become sort of legendary. You know, like people talk about it in hushed tones. if they live on, you know,
if they live in
Brooklyn, you know, and so.
Yes.
So, but whereas, I mean, I do like Ellie Goulding actually, but, you know, I kind of know what she's going to be. So,
I've never seen LCD Sound System live, and I remember when they first came out, and I even interviewed James Murphy, and I listened to the albums, and I'm like, it's cool, but I don't know if I want to go see him live. And then everyone talked about their live show, and because everyone has gushed about their live show, I'm like, okay, well, maybe I should go see LCD Sound System. But I'm afraid that I'm going to be disappointed. I'm afraid it's too hyped up.
Well, you know, all of this is about disappointment at the end of the day.
Because I've seen so many great live shows. How great is LCD Sound System's live show? To a 22-year-old kid, it might be the greatest thing ever.
No, it would be amazing. It was amazing. Or better yet, it was amazing.
See, I've listened to amazing albums, and I'm like, no, it's not amazing. It's nowhere near amazing. So, hey, Lyle, would you like to play some Lollapalooza trivia?
Yes, I'll be terrible at it, but sure.
Yeah, and I want to point out that I'm not trying to stump you.
Oh, okay,
this is just
fine.
A way to kind of talk
will.
More about Lollapalooza.
All right.
Yeah, but, you know, it's interesting. Interesting factoids. So, can you name me three main stage acts that performed at the very first Lollapalooza in 1991?
Jane's Addiction.
Correct.
I know Red Hot Chili Peppers was the next year.
Ooh, that you were also correct on that.
Oh God.
Think of the hip hop group. or the hip hop act that was at the first Lollapalooza? Because that was the big thing. It was, here's a rock act, here's an indie act, and oh, here's a hip hop act.
I've read this too, but I don't know.
Or actually, well, you know what? I kind of take that back because it was, well, I'll give you one right now. It was Ice-T and Body Count.
Oh,
it actually wasn't hip hop. It was metal.
Right.
It was metal, yeah.
Right.
And then Ice Cube played the following year.
Okay, but who was the third act on the first year?
So, no, there was, let's see, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 main stage acts.
What was the biggest of them?
There was Jane's Addiction, Susie and the Banshees, Living Color, Inch Nails, Fishbone.
Well, Nine Inch Nails, of course. I should have gotten
Ice T and Body Count, Butthole Surfers, Rollins Band, Violent Femmes.
Oh, that's right. Rollins Band played that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, following 1997... And on Lollapalooza 97, the headliners were Tool, Snoop Dogg, and Korn. Lollapalooza was canceled. So how many years did we live without Lollapalooza until it came back?
I thought it restarted in, what, 2001?
So 98, 99, 2000. So you're saying 4 years?
Yeah.
So it was actually 5 years.
Oh, okay.
It was brought back as a touring festival in 2003, featuring Jane's Addiction, Audioslave, Queens of the Stone Age, and Incubus. The next year, Perry came up with this whole scheme of things where he was going to get Sonic Youth, PJ Harvey, Morrissey, La Tigra, Flaming Lips, The Killers, and Modest Mouse to go to each city for 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
And the ticket sales were poor, so they canceled Lollapalooza 2004.
Right, right. I did know that, yeah.
And then they decided to bring it back, I believe, a year later and just have it permanently at Grant Park,
right.
In Chicago. Yeah. So speaking of the Red Hot Chili Peppers, how many times have they played Lollapalooza?
3.
Yes, you are correct.
All right.
And my last Lollapalooza question, what artist performed a daytime set on a tiny little stage in 2007 only to return 3 years later as a must-see headliner? A true Lollapalooza success story.
Oh, man. I have no idea.
And once I say the name, it all makes sense. And this act is a big pop act.
I don't know.
And it's not a band.
Oh, it's a
solo.
It's a
solo performer. And once I say it, you're going to kick yourself.
I'm kicking myself already, Jim.
All right. You want me to tell you who it was?
Go ahead.
So in 2007, on a tiny little stage, when the sun was beating down on her, Lady Gaga performed her very first Lollapalooza, and then 3 years later, she headlined.
Yeah. You know, I hear there's actually an interesting interview with Perry Farrell in the Chicago Tribune this week, where he talks about like what he's going to do. I think he talks about what he's going to do after this. Because he's organizing a new thing. He seemed to have a fairly... Well... He's, from what I understand from it, I didn't read it, but from what I understand, he seems to have, you know, he said there's an inevitable process of what it was when it started and what it became, and that he in particular hates the EDM stuff.
Really?
Yeah, and...
I felt like he was the one that was pushing it.
Well, he makes a distinction between EDM and house music, so...
Okay, because the dance stage at Lollapalooza is actually named after him.
Yeah, exactly.
So, birthdays, Lyle.
Well, there's not much today, I'm afraid.
I feel bad, because the last 2 weeks, instead of recording on a Wednesday, we recorded on a Thursday.
And I
feel like your birthdays were better on Wednesday.
Well, more people seem to be born on Wednesdays, which I don't understand. Well, not Wednesdays, obviously, but they fall on our Wednesday.
Yeah.
Today's birthday is Jacoby Shaddix from Papa Roach, the singer, is 40. Mm. Steve Morse is 62. He's the famous guitar player for Dixie Dregs, amongst other things. Simon Kirk, who is the drummer for Bad Company and Free, is 67. And I should note that yesterday was the birthday of Bobby Gentry, who was 72. She wrote the famous song Ode to Billy Joe that everybody knows, mm-hmm. and also performed the Burt Bacharach song I'll Never Fall in Love Again. And then if you just as a quick thing, if you want to read interesting stories that have come out in the last 6 months, it's the whole story of what happened to Bobby Gentry. She disappeared. And I mean, when I say disappeared from the spotlight. and apparently lives in a gated community in Florida. But it's just interesting how she was so successful and such a huge star and then just sort of turned her back on the entire thing and walked away.
And speaking of trivia, over email you asked me some trivia questions about that song.
Yes.
And I could not answer those without Googling them.
Yeah, well, you know,
The Tallahatchie Bridge?
It's the Tallahatchie Bridge, and what was the date of it? And the date was the 3rd of June. And of course, the big mystery is what was thrown into the water off the Tallahatchie Bridge, and then why did Billy Joe kill himself? And that's, of course, the whole, it's a brilliantly written lyric. I mean, it's really, really great. And of course, the consensus is that there was a baby born out of wedlock and they threw it into the water. But nobody knows that for sure because it's never really been disclosed.
I read something on that song. It was number one in the country on the Billboard Hot 100.
Right.
Isn't that crazy?
It was so big. I mean, it was one of those songs.
Like in 2016, you would never hear a song like this.
No.
Be the number one song in the country.
No, in no way, shape, or form would you. But it really sort of, I think it was because the lyrics were so mysterious and intriguing and because she had such a good voice. I mean, I knew it as a kid, but I wasn't like, I mean, I didn't own the record. I wasn't a fan, but you couldn't get away from it. It was like, you know, the Tallahatchie Bridge, man, you know. It's like the Harper Valley PTA. You just knew it. I don't know why I knew it, but I did.
It was the one dance of its time.
Absolutely.
From Drake featuring WizKid and Kyla. So yesterday, we lost Sandy Pearlman, who died at the age of 72. Lyle, did he produce The Clash?
He did produce The Clash, Give Him Enough Rope.
Okay.
Which, of course, is a famous record. He produced The Dictators. He produced the Dream Syndicate record, which is a major record for those in the alternative world. But mainly he was known as the manager and producer of Blue Oyster Cult. And he was considered to be a industry heavyweight in the sense that he was multi-talented. He was visionary. He was one of the founders of E-Music. Before anybody really thought that much about the whole idea of electronically delivering music, there he was.
Mm-hmm.
He also was the president of 415 Records later on after it was founded in San Francisco, which was a serious punk underground label. And what he's probably known for erroneously is,
I know where you're going.
Is the famous Saturday Night Live Behind the Music skit on Don't Fear the Reaper, which became the More Cowbell, famous More Cowbell. And the character that everyone said was Sandy was portrayed, of course, by Christopher Walken, who identified himself as Bruce Dickinson, or THE Bruce Dickinson. There's a number of memorable lines from it. The interesting thing is that Sandy was a co-producer on that record and wrote some of the lyrics. But actually, it was David Lucas who really produced the record, and it was David Lucas who came up with the cowbell idea. So people always say, oh, Sandy Pearlman, more cowbell, but it really wasn't him. But it's an example of one of those things that sort of gets out there in the world, and then it becomes, you can't erase it anymore. And to my knowledge, he never really made much comment about it. But what I found funny about it was that he was described himself at one point as the Hunter S. Thompson of rock. And the reason that's funny is because when I was in the Meat Men, Tesco used to call me the Hunter S. Thompson of rock and roll. So, which was not entirely a compliment. hold my hand over the candle. You know, no. Actually, he referred to me as that and other things as well. So it's sad that Sandy's gone. He was really, truly an amazing producer and an amazing manager and a real industry thinker and was, was often at conventions talking as a keynote speaker and always had something interesting to say.
So with Sandy being gone, does that now officially make you the Hunter S. Thompson of rock and roll?
Yeah, or the G. Gordon Liddy of rock and roll. One or the other. Yeah.
All right. So, Lyle, are you sitting down for this one?
Uh-oh.
Number one single on the Billboard Hot 100. Not One Dance from Drake featuring WizKid and Kyla. It's actually...
I Love Cheap Thrills!
Cheap Thrills from Sia featuring Sean Paul. And for those familiar with the song, Sean Paul was added on later. Because I remember listening to the album thinking that this was a standout track. And then I heard it on the radio a few months ago, and I'm like, what's Sean Paul doing karaoke on this for?
It's like, more than diamonds, more than gold.
He's just singing over the original track.
It's become a serious favorite in our household, just because we just love the lines. I mean, you know, this just they're fantastic.
The number one song on iTunes, Cold Water from Major Lazer featuring Justin Bieber and Moo. Number one
Moo?
Album on iTunes.
You mean Mo?
I think it's pronounced Moo.
Really?
I think so.
I've been saying Mo all this time.
Yeah, because I think at one point I needed to say her name on TV, so I had to sift through 20 or 30 different YouTube interviews, and I think I got Moo.
Oh, okay, good. Well, I know something now.
Because it's that M with the capital O and a slash through it.
Ah.
Number one album on iTunes, Everybody Looking from Gucci Mane, and the number one song on Spotify, Cold Water from Major Lazer featuring Justin Bieber and Moo. We're going to take another break, and when we come back, we've got our music picks of the week.
It was the 3rd of June, another sleepy, dusty Delta day. I was out chopping cotton, and my brother was baling hay. And at dinner time, we stopped and walked back to the house to eat. And Mama hollered at the back door, y'all remember to wipe your feet. And then she said, I got some news this morning from Choctaw Ridge. Today, Billy Joe McAllister jumped off the Tallahatchie Bridge.
Hey there, everybody. We are back from that tiny timeout, Jim Scheer and Lyle Presler with The Week in Music. Time now for our music picks of the week. Usually, Lyle, I will have my pick of the week being a song that I like.
Mm-hmm.
My pick of the week is a song I want to talk about.
Okay.
I might like it. I might not like it. We'll find out after I play it. Here is the brand new Prophets of Rage song titled Prophets of Rage. They put out an original song. I think they needed one.
Mm-hmm.
The super group of Rage Against the Machine, Public Enemy, and Cypress Hill. Lyle, as much as I want to love this group, as much as I want to love this song, I can't. This feels like it's 15 years old.
Yeah. My initial reaction is, first of all, I don't like the siren.
In a live setting, yeah. Use that in the live show.
Yeah, the siren seems to me to be just kind of like gratuitous and obvious. And I know that, I mean, I was thinking about it a little bit as I was drinking my coffee this morning, and I was thinking, if I were sitting in that control room, what would I be arguing for instead? Because it's good to have something there, but like, what should be there? And the siren's sort of an obvious choice. because mm-hmm. you can pitch it and it works. You know what I mean? It can work. You're right about the 15-year. It sounds to me like a Rage Against the Machine song. It sounds like their catalog in terms of the instrumentation, and that would be expected, right? Because that's what Tom Morello does. I mean, and I mean, I like it. I mean, I like that sound. I love that, you know, kind of that beat and that kind of, you know, the guitar doing its mm-hmm. sinewy kind of thing through there. So, I mean, on the surface of it, I'm like, oh, yeah, you know, but I think I'm going, oh, yeah, because it's familiar to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's like listening to an old Rolling Stones song. You don't really break it down too much because you've heard it so many times that you just, you know, you kind of accept it.
Yeah. See, what surprises me is that Rage Against the Machine has such a definitive sound.
Right.
And after they put out their first album, I thought, well, where do they go from here?
Right.
And then they released Evil Empire, and I thought, this is great. I love it. How did they put out another great album? And then they put out a third great album, and then they put out a covers album. So for me, it was always surprising that their music never felt tired, and this is the first time that I got that feeling about a rage song.
Yeah, I also think that the absence of Zach is a big deal here, because mm-hmm. the thing about Zach, which was that his vocal was so bizarre on top of what they were playing, and that's what made mm-hmm. it work. It was this total counterpoint, both in the way it sounded and the way he did it, that really set it off. I mean, basically, the guys are back there playing these heavy riffs. That's what they're doing, right? They're playing heavy mm-hmm. riffs. And he's up there kind of going, yeah, 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 yeah. I mean, he's going all over it. But that's what made it work. And I think mm-hmm. once you take that out and you just replace it with some fairly straightforward rappers, doing a good job, don't get me wrong. I love them. Yeah. But once you replace that, it no longer has the punch anymore. It no longer has the feeling of new. It just has the feeling of like, oh, okay, there it is.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I wouldn't...
Yeah, I like my Chuck D with the Bomb Squad.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I would, if it came on right now, I wouldn't get upset, but it just doesn't do a lot for me, ultimately.
Yeah. So what's your pick of the week?
Well, I'm doing this also in a sort of ambivalent mode. So let me just make that clear from the start. My pick is Girls Talk Boys by 5 Seconds of Summer, or as they are affectionately known on Radio Disney, 5 Sauce.
Yep. All right. Here it is.
Friends, the way you take away my breath is something bigger than myself. It's something I don't understand. No, no, I know we're young and people change, and we may never feel the same. So, baby, tell me what you say.
I like it, but I don't like it.
Yeah.
Because it's that was made for the Ghostbusters soundtrack, right?
I guess it was made for it or it was picked up for it. I don't know. Yeah, it's on the Ghostbusters soundtrack, definitely.
Can I use a quote from Lyle Presler?
Yeah.
It's all about the money. It's all about the money.
Yeah, I mean, it is. And by the way, you know, everything that they've done up to this point I mean, I don't want to make it sound like I sit around and really listen to it, but I have heard it, because if you have a 9-year-old, you will hear this stuff. So I've heard a lot of Five Sauce tracks over the last couple of years or year or so, and I've always sort of thought like, oh, God, you know, it's like you're trying to be sort of punk rocky, you know, but you really are just a pop band. The only thing I liked about this, and maybe it's just by comparison to what else is on the radio, is it has kind of an old school feel to it. And when I mean old school, I mean like old 80s school feel to it. You know, yeah, it's got that little guitar.
Definitely.
That little guitar riff in it. And the
riff is great.
Yeah. And when I first heard it, I was like, really? This is the same band? But, you know, the more I listened to it, the more I was like, nah, this is just, you know, a sheep in wolf's clothing again. You know, I mean, that's all it is. It's just that somebody was clever enough to say, hey, why don't you guys put this little riff in here and why don't you do this? But when they get to the sort of breakdown parts, it's nothing more than, you know, boy band with guitars.
Yeah, because it sounds like they went into the studio with the intention of making a big hit song off of a big summer movie.
Yeah, could be. I mean, I don't know the germination of that whole thing. I mean, one never really knows. Like sometimes, sometimes they literally commission songs, and then other times they just hear something and they go, "Yeah, we'll use that." So you never know. I mean, they could have gone to them and said, "Hey, write us a song," or they could have said, "Hey, you know, we ought to put like a band that appeals to the kids on here." Hey, they call up the manager of 5 Seconds of Summer and say, "Do you have anything?" And they go, "Yeah, yeah, we do." So, you know, yeah. You don't know. I mean, I don't know what it is.
Prophets of Rage in Five Sauce for our music picks of the week. We're going to take one more break, and when we come back, we'll play Ask Lyle.
I got to have more cowbell, baby. Guess what? I got a fever, and the only prescription is more cowbell.
Hey everybody, Jim Shear with Lyle Presler on The Week in Music. Programming note, there will be no episode next week. I will be in Los Angeles.
And I will be sitting in the dark going, Jim is coming, Jim is coming. Hold on, Jim is coming.
So imagine how good the show will be the following week when we have that 1 week rest.
Just imagine.
Hungry to get back at it again. So right now it is time to play Ask Lyle.
Ask Lyle.
So, Lyle, sort of a random question. If you attended Lollapalooza this weekend and you had to wear a ball cap, what would be on your hat? Would it be a sports team, a band, a company, a blank cap? If you had to wear one.
Yeah, I had to wear one.
Yeah.
Well, I have a Ford Motor Company hat that I bought at Kmart. And
okay.
I kind of like the way that fits. Mm-hmm. I don't really have any allegiance to Ford. I mean, other than the fact that I love Mustangs, but, you know, the old ones. But I probably would wear that. I mean, you're talking about something that's just I have that exists, or something that I could ideally get.
Or maybe you think, you know what, I'm going to go get a Washington Nationals hat.
I do have both a Washington Senators and a Washington Nationals hat.
Oh, okay.
That I did not buy, that were given to me. But the Washington Senators hat is a 1968 throwback hat when Ted Williams was managing the Senators back in those days. Mm-hmm. And as a kid, I did go to Senators games. I actually have some pictures of me with players on the field and stuff, which they used to let you do. You know, you'd walk out on the field after the game and they'd pose with you. So that was
cool.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. Old, like old prints. Yeah, I might wear that. It's red, you know. I don't know. I mean, red is not my best color, but I guess I'd wear
that. What color's the Ford hat?
The Ford hat is blue and white, which would be the Ford colors.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That one sounds nice.
Yeah. I mean, it's Kmart.
If I was your fashion consultant, I'd say, yeah, go with that one.
No, I think Kmart, you know, you go to Kmart, man. They have some interesting things there.
Yeah, one time at a rest stop, I got an awesome $5 Weezer hat.
Ooh, there you go.
And people always ask me, where did you get that hat? I said, at a truck stop in the middle of Pennsylvania.
Totally unlicensed, and it was the only, you know.
The only one they had. So my final question, after we finish doing this show, me and you are actually going to get on Skype and practice for our Beastie Boys cover band for MCA Day happening August 20th at Littlefield Art Space in Brooklyn. So I'm guessing that Minor Threat never practiced via Skype.
No.
But what was the most odd practice that Minor Threat ever had? Either in approach or setting. Or an oddity that happened at a Minor Threat practice.
Well, as a general rule, we rehearsed in the basement of the old Discord house in Arlington, Virginia. And it was an old sort of bungalow-styled house, and it had a completely unfinished basement with low beams that meant you could not stand up entirely straight. Now, keep in mind, I did this for 3 years, okay? So if you see pictures, you'll see we're all sort of hunched, and except for Jeff, who's sitting down, luckily. And it was like we were within 2 feet of each other. So most of my hearing loss is probably, you know, attributed to that thing. And it was, I mean, you didn't even want to look in the corners for fear there was something lurking. You know, it was dank and damp, and yet it's beloved. I mean, you know, it's like I've been back a couple times and just I got to go in the basement. You know, mm-hmm. because it's mm-hmm. just, it's like, and it was also tilted because all basements, you know, they're tilted so water will run down to a drain. So you mm-hmm. had to sort of make sure the amps didn't sort of slide down. So, you know, just bad carpeting on the floor, you know, it was really disgusting in many ways. But if you actually got your head between the rafters, you could actually stick your head up a bit and almost stand up straight.
Okay.
So I guess that would be the general rule. I would say that anytime we tried to rehearse while we were on the road and rehearsed at other people's houses and stuff, those were always weird because you don't rehearse in front of audiences. It's just not, you know, it's not pleasant really. Cause you're sitting there going, you're playing it wrong again, you know, like that. I will tell you this, and this is sort of an ancillary to that, but if you saw a sound check from Minor Threat in probably 82 or 83, like after 80, 81, kind of in that period, in the later period. First of all, Ian never did sound checks to preserve his voice. So there was never, there would never be Ian on stage singing. And we used to check the songs doing them reggae style. So like we try to turn every single one of our songs into a reggae. Now we had a sound man, so it's not like we had to worry about like, you know, they knew what they were doing. They just wanted to get it right for the room. But so we would turn everything into a joke. So at a certain point, I'm not sure we ever played a song straight in soundcheck. And by the way, a lot of artists do that. It's not, that's not a really a, you know.
Yeah.
Because you just get bored of it. And you want to save it also for the performance. You don't really want to be up there like thrashing away. So
it's a nice way to keep it fresh.
Absolutely.
So in your history of playing music, have you ever practiced on Skype before?
No.
Wow.
In fact, you know, it's interesting that you introduced all this new technology to me, because I remember the first time I ever heard about any kind of electronic use in sort of a recording or studio situation was, and this may be apocryphal, by the way, so someone should tell us if they know for sure. But my understanding is that the Eddie Van Halen guitar solo on, Beat It, right? On Michael Jackson's Beat It. That was actually recorded in a separate studio and transmitted to the studio where Michael Jackson was working. And they, you know, they laid it in the track there. That he wasn't in the same room. He wasn't in the same studio.
Really?
Either. Now today that would be very common. That would be
sure.
You know, but back then, that I remember hearing that and thinking, wow, they used a satellite and everything, you know, because there was no internet. So it was a satellite delivery. Now I'm not sure if that's entirely true. That might have just been a story that was floated at the time to make it seem more exciting. But I remember hearing that. In fact, I remember hearing that while I was on the road with Minor Threat, because that's when Beat It came out. And I remember thinking, wow, technology is really... And meanwhile, I'm going to these horrible clubs and playing through a Shure microphone sound system. So Eddie Eaton.
But if anyone could do that in the 80s, it would have been Michael Jackson.
And it would have been, yeah, it would have been Michael Jackson, and it would have been, you know, the Eddie Van Halen thing. I mean, that makes sense. That's why the story made sense, you know, so.
Yeah. All right, so let's make some rock and roll history right now, Lyle.
All right.
All right, so for Lyle Presler, my name is Jim Scheer, and we will see yins later.
So long.
Ladies and gentlemen, Elvis has just left the building.